cleanliness in hospitals is paramount to stopping the spread of germs, but in the home, it might be a killer. Researchers have long suspected that our obsession with cleanliness is leading to more allergies, but now a new study suggests that germ-free homes may lead to childhood leukemia. Professor Mel Greaves conducted the study, which has been 30 years in the making. Welcome to RN Drive.
Good evening. Thank you for your interest.
What led you to begin studying the possible link between cleanliness and leukemia?
Well, it's a long story, as you said, 30 years. When parents are faced with the horrible diagnosis of leukemia, they always ask two questions. One is, can it be cured? And the answer, thankfully now, is yes in 90% of cases. And the other question is always, well, what caused it? And this has been a controversy and a very contentious one for 100 years. And about 3 decades ago, it struck me that the common form of this disease across the world tracks with affluence or socioeconomic development. So the rates are relatively high in Australia, in the UK, Western Europe, and the United States, but much lower in less developed countries. The prevailing idea had been that it was something to do with infection, but infection and infectious diseases usually track in the opposite direction. So I basically flipped the whole idea and thought, well, maybe it's lack of infection. So we set about a whole series of studies based on the biology of the disease, the genomics, and epidemiology, trying to piece this together. And eventually what's emerged is a pretty clear story, we think with robust evidence, that common infections do trigger this disease, but only in the context of children who've had deficient exposure to infections in the first year of life. And the reason this all makes a great deal of sense, going back to what you were saying in the opening remarks, is there's increasing evidence that the developing immune system of a very young child or infant actually requires exposure, almost certainly to benign microbes, bacteria and viruses, in order to prime it for suitable later reactions. So I think in modern societies, it's not just cleanliness, we can come to this in a moment, but in modern societies, we've reduced the possibility of proper interactions with sources of these infections so that our children are being deprived, or their immune systems, of that rather essential priming experience.
How did you ascertain that there was a lack of exposure to germs in these patients? Did you ask them about their cleanliness and exposure to germs? How did you figure that out?
Absolutely. No, we didn't actually, Patricia. We looked at what we call surrogate measures, because we weren't sure what germs would be relevant. So the questions we asked the epidemiology studies that have been reproduced across the world now are the following. What happens if you go to a playgroup in the first year of life? Because we know they are sources of communicable infections. What happens if you're firstborn versus third or fourthborn? Because children pick up infections from older siblings. What happens if you're breastfed or not? Because breastfeeding is a source of microbial nutrients and indeed of bacteria. And in all of those instances, what came out is the children who were developing this leukemia were less likely to have been breastfed, were more likely to be firstborn, and were less likely to have gone to playgroups. So this isn't cleanliness itself. It's opportunities for social contacts and for exposure. So that providing pretty compelling evidence. Something was missing, almost certainly some microbial exposure.
You said before it was not just about cleanliness. In what other ways can we be exposed to germs as kids?
Well, the key question is, if we call it the microbiome now, if these benign, beneficial bacteria that humans have been living with tens of thousands of years are important, how do we normally get them? We might get some through mucking around in the dirt. I mean, people working on allergy think that might be the case, the parasites. But mainly we get them from other people. And the first source is at birth, from mum through the birth canal. And it turns out, rather extraordinarily, that if you have a cesarean section which is more sterile, you have a higher risk of leukemia. So the first exposure is via birth. The second one is from breastfeeding, as I already said. And the third one is when infants are exposed to their siblings and other children, which is a common source of infection. So I don't think it's, strictly speaking, hygiene and cleanliness through dirty worktops in the kitchen. I think it's to do with how societies like yours and ours have changed over a few decades, let's say, to reduce these essential exposures and personal contacts between people, smaller family sizes, less breastfeeding.
And so you're now convinced that there is a link?
Well, it's a very, very strong link. What I think was the final bit of the jigsaw puzzle for me was to model this whole disease in mice, mimicking this whole question of lack of exposure and then later exposure, which precipitates or triggers the disease. We've got that to work in animal systems, in mice, and when I put all the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle together, I'm pretty convinced. But there's one thing missing, which is we actually have to show you can prevent leukemia by appropriate intervention. And that's going to be the challenge for the next few years, starting with animal systems and then hopefully moving to human infants.
What's the connection between leukemia and the flu?
There's no direct connection. One of the key questions, though, is if infections in susceptible children trigger the disease a few months before the disease, a proximal trigger, which infections can do that? They're clearly something very common. And we think a number of viruses and bacteria could do this. But in terms of observational data, there's two pieces of data that are in this recent paper that suggest flu viruses can do it. There's a connection in the UK between a seasonal epidemics of flu and peaks or increases in this cancer. And last year, we reported with colleagues in Italy a cluster of cases in Milan, and in particular in a school in Milan, that was associated with infection with swine flu virus. So I'm not saying flu viruses cause leukemia, but we think they are one of a set of common respiratory infections that can trigger the disease in susceptible children.
So if there is a potential flu link that suggests that the cancer could be viral, is that like the papillomavirus leading to cervical cancer?
No, that's a good question, Patricia. It's very, very different. In papillomavirus, as you know from researchers in Australia in particular, there's a very strong, straightforward connection between papilloma and virus, which causes the cancer, cervical cancer. That's not the case here. There's an indirect link with infection, and it's not one specific infection like papillomavirus. It's a non-specific trigger through these respiratory infections in the context, as I said, of a deficient immune system because of lack of exposure. So it's similar to papilloma only insofar as it involves an infectious agent, but it's very different in what is actually happening.
How have colleagues in the medical and the scientific community reacted to your research?
You probably have to ask them. I'm sure some will raise questions and issues and challenges, which is good. In the community of people I'm very familiar with who work on childhood leukemia, there's a lot of interest in this. A lot of people who contributed to the story. It's not just a story from my laboratory. And I think there's a consensus view that this is a very plausible explanation. I think what's key now really is showing that we can actually prevent leukemia by the appropriate intervention by giving benign microbes.
So you talked about, you know, societies like ours, basically the developed world. Are there higher cases of childhood leukemia in developed countries than developing ones? What are the statistics on that?
If you look at the international statistics which are available through various registries on these cases, the incidence varies at least tenfold across the world. And the highest rates are in Scandinavia, in the developed countries, the lowest rates in the less developed countries. As many years ago, when I was starting this and exploring these possibilities, we compared black and white children in South Africa, and the rates in white children in South Africa were like Australian and UK rates, and the black children had very low rates. In the United States, 30 years ago, the blacks had very low rates. They now have rates approximating to those of whites, so it's changing over time. So it's an indirect association. It's quite a striking correlation overall with socioeconomic development. It doesn't track with affluence in individual families. I'm not saying if you're a more affluent family with a better bank balance, you're more likely to get leukemia. But in society, it tracks with all that's associated with increasing socioeconomic development.
Now, luckily, we've had the chance to talk to you in a more detailed way, but of course, there have been headlines that have come out of your study, and sometimes those headlines, I think, can be problematic. You know, do we have to be careful about thinking, oh, we can just let our kids roll around more in the dirt and that's a sort of preventative measure for leukemia, or, you know, don't worry about cleaning your house too much?
Yeah, I think some of these headlines are almost unavoidable. Usually the article's much better, but the headline writers like sensationalizing things. I'm very concerned about the message that might be sent out to parents. The last thing I want is that parents of children with leukemia have got enough to deal with to feel in any way guilty. They're absolutely not. It's nothing to do with anything unusual, untoward that they've done. And the question you raise really is, what should we do about cleanliness? I think we are overzealous about cleanliness. And we need to relax a bit about that and not worry about minor respiratory infections. So that would be one piece of advice. And there are a number of health benefits. It's not just leukemia. There's strong hints that type 1 diabetes and allergies are part of this story. I mean, my general advice while we wait to try to get a medical intervention, which I think will happen eventually to parents, is be a bit more relaxed about these things, about hygiene and about infections, but also breastfeeding, as we already know for other reasons, is very beneficial. That should be encouraged. But also in the first year of life, which is a critical time window, encourage your infant to have as many, or help your infant to have as many social contacts with other children as possible, because that is clearly protective.
So you mentioned breastfeeding, but again, not everybody can breastfeed. So again, the guilt element needs to be managed here too, doesn't it? Because there are many reasons why people can't breastfeed.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what's not clear from the data so far, certainly things missing, is if you don't breastfeed, does daycare attendance or exposure to other children substitute for that? Or if you can't go to daycare, has breastfeeding stuff? We don't know how all these things interact. So, of course, there are all sorts of reasons why women mums may not be able to breastfeed. But then I would all the more say, well, nevertheless, there are other ways in which your children can acquire these beneficial bugs, and the best way is probably social contacts with other infants and especially other older children.
So are you now encouraged that we could be closer to a cure or even a vaccine if there is a viral link?
Yeah. Well, the good news aspect of this, amongst all these concerns you've raised, is twofold. One, that this cancer is intrinsically malignant, and before we had effective treatment, every single child would die. Now the cure rate is 90%. But having said that, the treatment is toxic. It lasts 2 or 3 years. It's traumatic for the child and the family. So I think if we could have prevention, it would be much better. And I think what this research suggests is that it almost certainly is preventable cancer. So that's the challenge now and the excitement now for me and my colleagues is to try to get that up and running.
Professor Mel Greaves, many thanks for your time. It's been a very interesting conversation.
Thank you very much for your interest.
Professor Mel Greaves is a researcher at the Institute of Cancer Research in London. This is RN Drive.